Hello everyone. We are back for another edition of Once Upon an Island, Tales from Lopez. I'm Ali Smalders, and with me is...
Rosie Sumner, and I'm filling in for Laurie Harrison, who is still enjoying herself in the country of France. And today we have a really special person that we're speaking with, a real old-timer, from the south end of Lopez, Betty Haston. And we're sitting with her in her living room. And she surprised us today by telling us that she's been working on her memoirs. So I'm going to introduce Betty, and she'll be reading some of her notes that she's written about her life, and we'll be interrupting her a lot and just talking about what life was like for her on Lopez. So, Betty, you can start to read your memoirs or just say hello.
Hi, I'm Betty Haston, and this is what I can remember, most of it. I was born on Lopez Island near the Lopez Village at Mrs. Meade's, and my mother and dad were Arthur and Violet Norman. We lived with my grandparents, Michael and Dora Norman, at Mud Bay till I was about 4 years old.
Now, Betty, I'm going to interrupt you already. I want you to tell us where your parents came from.
My grandparents and my dad came from Norway, and Dad was just a baby. And they settled in Minnesota, and then they came to Seattle, and then they came to Lopez. I think my grandpa had a job in the fish camp that was at Mud Bay at that time. And he had a job with them.
And when he came from Norway, did he come with his brothers?
Yes, there were three or four brothers, and as I understand it, they all had to drop their last name. They weren't allowed to have that many Jorgensens in coming into our country, so they all dropped their last name, and each had about four names anyway, so they all ended up with a different last name. And my dad was Norman. They're my grandparents.
He picked Norman. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, and your mom?
And they settled at Mud Bay, and my mother lived in Montana, and she ended up being born in Manitoba. And then her folks migrated out here to Lopez later in life.
So that's where your grandparents met.
And her name was Vogt, V-O-G-T.
And that's where your parents met here on Lopez.
Yeah. They worked at a fish cannery at Richardson. There were two fish canneries in those days. And my dad hauled fish to them, and she worked in the cannon filling machine, filling the cans and stuff.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But when your grandfather was working on Lopez, that must have been in the 1880s?
I'm not too sure, but my grandparents lived in Seattle during the fire.
Oh,
and
Seattle
I have
fire.
A sewing machine that went through the fire, and then he put it together in the top of the, where you put your clothes in when you're sewing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I have it over at the house. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I was about 4 years old when we moved from my grandparents, and I'll never forget the day we moved to our new home. Grandma cried and cried. When I was 3 and a half, my brother Art was born in Friday Harbor at Mrs. Perry's. A neighbor boy said he was going to steal him, and I proceeded to bite him on his forehead. While Mom was there and my brother was a few days old, Dad came and got me to stay with him and my grandparents. I remember coming home with Eddie Weeks. He had a taxi. In about a year and a half, my brother Ed was born at the Davis Plouse. The first time I saw him, he was so small and looked blue.
Betty, where was the Davis house?
Well, now it belongs to Hildegard Goss.
Okay, so way down
Agate
there.
Beach.
Way down there by Agate.
when last time my dad had to milk the cow, at first he only got a little milk, but very time it got better. It was during that time Mrs. Gallinger stayed with us. I had my first taste of rice. I didn't care much for it.
Now, who was Mrs. Gallinger?
She was another one of those ladies that took care of the women when they had babies.
Ah, yes.
There
were
just
quite
like
a few
Mrs.
of those.
Mead
Jack
and Mrs.
Gallinger,
Perry.
I think, was her husband's name.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Most kids on Lopez were born, they weren't born at a doctor's clinic or anything.
No,
they were born in,
no.
in a house with a midwife.
Well, they were midwife. Well, mm-hmm. My brother Art, I guess they probably had a doctor in Friday Harbor. But mm-hmm.
And some of them were born in Anacortes in the hospital, but they stayed with another lady who made a practice of having the pregnant women stay at her house until they were ready to deliver.
Oh, like a doula.
Yeah.
Only they didn't know that word.
No, they didn't know
then.
That.
Yeah.
But sometimes the women were not quite sure of their due date, and so they stayed there for a long, long time.
Yeah.
You know.
10 days at least.
Yeah.
My mom's sister Ethel lived with us some of the time after her dad remarried. She was like a big sister to me. She taught me to write my ABCs and numbers. And then one Christmas Eve, we had a terrible windstorm and a Jap fisherman drowned off of Billy Wilson's place. Now it's known as Iceberg Point. His folks looked for him for days. I remember they found a boot on the beach. One Jap made it to shore and walked to Guggemund's, which is now owned by Barbara Jennings. The relatives brought them a fish and a lot of pickled kelp and so forth for helping. My mother always knew his body was behind a big log on Agate Beach, covered with drift and after the storm. Nobody believed her, but years later the bones became visible. One day the folks were gone, and Ethel and I went to the beach at Agate Beach, dug two clams and brought them home. She washed them and put them in the firebox to cook. They were really good.
Oh, so that's an amazing story about your mom knowing that that dead fisherman was on the beach.
Well, she tried to dig him out with a stick, but she couldn't do it. And she tried to get a neighbor, Mr. Guggemann, to bring his horses and move the log.
Because
it was really big. He wouldn't do it. Yeah.
So there may be a ghost down there.
She just had the premonition, I guess.
Wow.
Mom, Mrs. Miller, and Florence Fagerholm took turns taking us to school every
and
year.
How did they take you?
Pardon?
How did they take you?
With their car.
Oh, with the car. There were cars already.
Yeah,
okay.
They, Florence and Mrs. Miller and Florence Fagerholm lived at the camp, fish camp. And we lived up the road, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And we were little, and we had to walk over here to this Mud Bay school.
So the fish camp was at Richardson?
Hmm?
The fish camp was at Richardson's?
No. It was at Barlow Bay, or whatever you call it.
Oh, okay.
Mud Bay.
Yeah.
It's called
Every
Mud
year
Bay.
When school started, Mom made me 3 new dresses. I used to play with Floyd Miller, and he gave me my first kiss at Agate Beach. One winter, we stayed at the cookhouse at the camp. Mom cooked for the men. Floyd Miller used to come and pound on the door and say, "Mrs. Norman, let me in."
Because the door was locked?
Yeah, the door had a wooden little latch that closed it.
So
she kept it closed.
Was that fish camp where the concrete buildings are now? You know, at Barlow Bay, there's the old buildings that the tribe owns? But they don't use it anymore, the cannery?
No, it's not a can. It never was a cannery. It was just a place
fish
where
fish processing plant?
No, it wasn't anything like that. The Millers were the caretakers, and he run the camp. And they had their piles there pulled up in the winter for their traps and the boats that went out and collected the fish at all these traps. I don't know how many traps they had, a whole bunch of them from here to Bellingham.
I've seen pictures, old pictures of what
yeah.
Barlow Bay looked like in the old days, and
well,
it's just full of boats.
Right, yeah.
So what years are we talking now about? How old were you? Mid-20s. Because you were born in 1921.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
I used to ride horsey on my dad's back. One day I fell off and my elbow gave him a black eye. When I was about 10, we moved to the Stemlin farm. I finished growing up there. I didn't go away to high school. I was 13.
And tell us where that farm was.
Stemlin. Well, I don't know the name of it. Now the house is painted black. That's all I know.
It's down on Alec Bay Road.
Yeah, it's on Alec Bay Road. I didn't go away to high school. I was 13 and would have had to leave home as the school was at Lopus. And I was too young to drive, so I couldn't drive. And they couldn't afford to take me every day.
Now, I want to ask you something about driving, Betty, because you told us that later, when you got older, you learned how to drive all kinds of things.
Yeah, when we came out here.
Uh-huh. A baler and a tractor.
A cattle truck. And
the horses.
Horses, yeah, on the hay fork. And a wagon once or twice. In 32, Brother Doug was born. That was when I learned to milk a cow to help my mother out. Dad was gone away fishing every day for the fish camp. Everyone thought we were rich because Dad worked all winter at the fish camp hauling up boats and repairing them. He made $75 a month. Mom always had a big garden. We had lots of green peas. Mom would pick them, and my brothers and I sat on the back porch and shelled them. That was before electricity came, so she canned them. Every Thanksgiving, we would go to Port Townsend, spend the day with Aunt Jenny Hurd and her family, sister.
How did you get to Port Townsend?
We went on a steamer called the Mohawk from Richardson, and they dropped us off at Port Townsend.
And who was Aunt Jenny?
Aunt Jenny was my dad's sister, one of them. Mom and I belonged to the Richardson Guild and Birthday Club, so we spent a lot of time embroidering and crocheting for the bazaar. In my last year of school, I used to see Phil Haston go by in his little Ford. He always wore a black and red plaid coat. My heart always skipped a beat. I never dreamt then that I would be married to him someday.
For how long were you married to him, Betty?
67 years.
67 years.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
Yeah. We started going together when I was about 14. And I didn't write that's in there. But I never could figure it quite out. They had a fabulous Christmas party this year. I was only 13 then, because my birthday is the day after Christmas. And all the young kids at that age participated. And they had the stage like a cabin on a boat. And they had a big lighthouse in the corner, and the deck in front of there. And we all dressed in sailor outfits and sang Christmas songs and stuff. So I don't know whose mother did what, but they had Phil and his brother Bud pick me up, because I was the only girl down this way. So that started us going together.
And who was who were the creators of this amazing Christmas party?
Well, I can't even name them all now.
Uh-huh.
They're all gone.
Uh-huh.
A lot of them aren't with us anymore, like Grace Pickering and Norma Wilson and a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, was this at Woodman Hall?
Woodman Hall.
Yeah, on the stage there.
I don't think they've ever had anything like that since that I know of.
Mm.
It was just all the teenagers on the island participated.
Mm, that's great. And how many do you think that was about?
Well, I was 13. That's 34. 33
yeah,
or 34.
Yeah, yeah. And about how many teenagers were there then?
Oh, I don't know.
Like 20 or?
Oh, I suppose the whole stage was like that, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was really great.
That's great.
And Phil picked you up because he was already driving.
Yeah, he did the driving. Anyway, we took in ball games he played in and the dances. Some were at the Legion Hall and some were at the blacksmith shop, which was John Wilson's.
And that's...
And they've moved that now off... It was right on the corner. Uh-huh. You know, now they had to move it up a little bit.
Near Gerhardt's, right? Near
yeah,
Gerhardt
it's Crane's. On Gerhardt's place. Uh-huh. Yeah, and that was for mostly for the younger group that didn't drink, you know, and stuff. Uh-huh. Like down the hall. We moved in 39 after our daughter Phyllis was born. In 40, we moved to Seattle.
Was that because
so
of the war?
We were married in 39. I said moved. Sorry about that. And Phil had a hard time finding work. It finally got a job in a boat repair. Then in the spring, he went to Alaska again. This year, he was the skipper on a boat named Eagle. I never felt so alone as the day his boat sailed across the Lake Union. I could see it from our house. Now it's... He told me exactly how to get home from where the boat was tied up. And so when I got there, I was supposed to take Phyllis's diaper and go out in the front of the house and wave it, which I did. And so then I jumped in the car and took off for the locks because I was going to tell him to come back home, not go. But when I got there, he was gone. And the next day, or on the way home, I stopped to see his brother Bud and his wife at Dinner Bay. And he was working on the railroad then in Florence. Wanted to go to Bellingham, so away we went the next day. I'll never drove so much in town, but we made it okay.
And this was still before the war.
Yeah.
Yeah, this, because yeah. the
well,
United
it was
States...
happening in Europe, but
yeah.
not here.
No, but I mean, the United States was not yet in the war in 41.
No.
It came, but...
Yeah.
And Phyllis cried most of the way home. I spent part of the summer with my folks on Lopus. Phil came home in the fall, and we took a trip down through Oregon and Washington. We saw Cooley Dam being built. We used to go fishing on the Cedar River later, and Phil carried Sharon through the Scotch Brooms. My dad stayed with us for a while. He worked at Grandy's, a boatyard. Phil worked at Ice Olsen and Wing. Then it was a boatyard. While we were there, we also had a daughter named Betty Ann. She only lived less than a year. Got some kind of a blood disease, so they said. It was so good to have Sharon later to hold a baby again. When the war was over, we bought the farm from Phil's folks and moved to Lopus Island. We had a hard time making ends meet for a long time. I feel bad that we couldn't afford oranges and bananas for the kids. We ate a lot of scrambled eggs and deer meat.
And where was the farm of your, that you came to?
Pardon?
Where was the farm that you...
South end of Lopus Island.
Where we are right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right here.
His Hastings have owned it ever since it been a farm. They bought it through the school land.
Uh-huh.
They called it the Sessions Law in those days.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And about when was that, do you suppose? What year would they have purchased this land?
I don't remember. I had the papers over at the house, but I don't remember. They only had to pay a few dollars, you know. And then when they finally got the papers, it was in the 20 sometime,
mm-hmm.
the final papers.
Mm-hmm.
You want to read any more?
Well, I think we were thinking that we would just ask you some questions about what you'd read, and if you're welcome to read more if you want to. It's
no,
up,
that's
it's up
right.
to you. Okay. So I was going to ask you all the things that Phil did during the war when you were in Seattle. You lived up on Queen Anne.
Yes.
Right? And what was Phil doing?
He was repairing boats in the shipyard. He got froze. The government froze him in the shipyard because he knew how to build and repair wooden boats.
Did he want to go in? What do you mean by he got froze? That's
well,
where he had to stay?
Yeah, if he hadn't, he'd had to go in the service.
I see.
We just had the one little girl at that time.
And what year was Phil born, Betty?
15.
1915. So he was 6 years older than you?
Seven.
Mm-hmm. Seven?
Yeah. Closer to seven.
Uh-huh. Okay. And where did you guys get married?
Down near the village. Yeah, Mr. Goodrow, the preacher here then, lived there.
Uh-huh.
It's right next, now it's that house on this side of that new church.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who owns it now.
Uh-huh. And near the Episcopal Church.
Yes.
And Mr. Goodrow, was he Marguerite's dad?
Or her Barney's dad.
Barney's dad, right.
Because one of the shows was when you, Ollie, when you went over and spoke with Marguerite and Ona Jean.
I think the last couple he married was Barbara and Dickie.
Oh, Pickering. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And I've heard a lot about chivalries.
Oh, they were quite the thing in those days. They don't do that anymore.
Can you explain what a chivalry was?
Well, when we came home after we were, I guess we were gone about a week, and we were had to be down at Mom's, of course, for that, because our house was just little. And I don't know how many turned out, but there was more than the house would hold. And the men were supposed to give everybody a cigar, and the women passed around this plain old hard candy. And they didn't, I don't remember them having anything to eat. They just talked and visited, you know.
Uh-huh.
And rang cowbells and made a lot of noise. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And teased you.
Pardon?
Teased you.
Yeah.
Yeah, just gave you trouble. Because Ollie was telling me that have you already spoken about this? I found this fascinating, the history of chivalries on Lopez.
Yeah, we have one program. The second program that we did with the Goodrow women had some technical difficulties. And so Laurie and I told the stories that they had told. And then we found a book in the library that was written by somebody on Orcus. And it's called The Pig Wars, and it tells a lot about Lopez, and it tells about chivalries and something that happened before 1900. Mm-hmm. So in other words, that is long, long ago, when Lopez was still full of forests, you know, before it had been clear-cut.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a chivalry or not that... I don't know exactly what happened, but somebody got shot or something.
Yeah,
it was a man who he had been married before, and his wife had died, and then that was very sad. And the people on island all, you know, supported him. And then years later, he remarried, and that was a lovely wedding. And he lived in what later became
Josie Beecher's farm.
Mm-hmm.
Near the school.
And but of course the school wasn't there yet.
Right.
But then there was a chivalry, and he had always enjoyed doing that. But then he was not so pleased when a whole large group of people came. And he came down and took his,
whatever you call it, and
he tried to shoot over the heads, and he actually hurt two people. And so that whole story is on one of our programs, which is really interesting to listen to, because it is difficult to imagine what the island looked like at a time before it had been clear cut.
Right.
Like when somebody died, then they had to take this body from the farm all the way to Center Church, and they had to do it on a trail, and the men
had to
carry them on their shoulders.
Oh,
so that whole story is really very strange, and that was way before, of course, the chivalries that Betty is talking about.
Yeah.
But it must have died out at a certain point, this custom.
Uh-huh. Do you know about that? You must have been around when the chivalries stopped happening, if they had one for you.
I can't remember. haven't any after we were gone to Seattle for 4 years, and then when the war was over, we came back here. I don't remember having them very much after that.
Oh, well, there's a challenge for us. Maybe we ought to have a few shiveries and see how they go over. Watch out, all you engaged people.
Right. I wanted to ask a question. You mentioned Richardson, and that store existed for 80 years or so.
Well, the store, the first I remember, the store wasn't where it ended up. It was an older store, and it was just, they made a cut there, and they put the road down below. The store was up above where the house is now. Uh-huh. It was next to it. And I remember having barrels of pickles and stuff like that instead of little packages and cans. And then later years, well, they built the one down by the water. But right. That was quite a deal, you know, there at Richardson. It was kind of before my time, too. But there were two fish canneries, and there was a Chinaman house, and they hired a lot of Chinese to work in those canneries. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I remember the Loganberry patch. Oh, my goodness, it was, I don't know, acres of back there. And we used to go down and pick loganberries, and a lot of the teenagers picked them for them, you know, and then they shipped them to Seattle, catfight.
Yeah, we hear the kitties. Yeah.
And but Richardson was a neat store. They carried everything you could think of. It was sure a shame to see it burn down.
Yeah, it was. I was here for that. That was awful.
Did you see, I think you mentioned that you knew the first storekeeper.
Well, yeah, that was in that picture, and then it was in that little shopper here a while back, and I think Phil had a bigger one, and they have it at the store.
You mean
too.
The picture of everybody at the picnic?
Yeah.
On Lopez Hill?
Yeah, and the one lady on the left, in the first row, Phil's dad said it was Mrs. Kindleside, and she was the first storekeeper. That's all I know.
But it's so interesting to me because we had a story also about the store, the trading post at Fish Bay. And the person there who was the first storekeeper was Hyman Hutchison. And in those days, and I don't know how long ago that was, they did a lot of barter instead of buying.
Yeah.
And Addie Chadwick, who lived on Chadwick Hill until she was 88, tells about her father going down to the store at the trading post, as they called it, and he would shoot a deer and dress it and take the skin, and the deer skin would be exchanged for flour.
Right. They used to walk clear down to Lopez.
That's a long way from Chadwick.
Yeah, I thought it was an enormous end. Yeah. It took him all day to do this.
Right.
It was his market day.
Yep. And then when Phil was little, and I don't know, he was born up in the middle of the island, and he must have been a year or so old when they moved here after he got the house built and that. But then they had a horse and buggy. And his mom used to go to Port Stanley. I don't know why they didn't go to Richardson. But they used to shop there at that store because there were three stores, you know.
Well, Richardson, Port Stanley, and the village?
Yeah. And I don't know, but there might have been another one at Lopez years later, before that. But when I remember, there were three.
Uh-huh.
And there were three post offices. And
Four
post offices. We had a post office, they say, here at Mud Bay, called Otis.
Uh-huh.
But that was long before me.
Uh-huh. But it's interesting that Minister Guthrow sometimes had to do his sermons three times on Lopez because, you know, it was too far away for people to all come to the same place.
He was so great. Yeah. This lady, Mrs. Matson, she was a widow lady with three girls, and he used to take eggs and take them to town and sell them for her, and then he'd bring her groceries, whatever she wanted, you know. And he was really great.
Oh.
He'd go out and work in the haying in the summer to make a few extra dollars, because in those days when they went to church, you were lucky to get a nickel or some pennies or something when they passed the plate. And now it's paper money generally.
Yeah, and they said on an earlier program, I think it was Mary Harris who said that the minister got $5 for the sermon. That was his salary.
And then in the fall, the guild had a, I don't know what they'd call it, but harvest festival probably or something. And they served dinner and charged so much for that. And then they'd have vegetables and stuff like that to sell, or fancy work, whatever. And whatever money they took in, they gave to Mr. Goodrow.
And where did he live?
Well, it was in the community house, they called it then. There was two buildings, where Lopus Church and then this other big building, and then they tore it down and rebuilt it, the one that's there now. Yeah.
And where was that?
Next to the Lopus Church.
Okay. And you mean the one in by the cemetery?
The Lopus Church.
In town. In the one in town there, the old one with the steeple?
So that's the one that was built in 1902.
Yeah,
I don't know. The center church was all donated. Phil's grandpa was the one that helped build it. George Haston, too.
Which one came first?
I don't know.
Huh. They're both pretty old. Pretty beautiful old churches. Now, after the war, Betty, you told us it was difficult to survive.
Yeah.
So what did you end up doing to make ends meet?
Well, Phil worked out a lot. In the 40s, you got $2 a day working all day. And then we had four cows, and we shipped a can or cream or whatever we could get out of them. We got $2 and something a can for a 10-gallon can of cream in those days. And in later years, we borrowed money and built this barn, and because we had an old one out that way. And then we started shipping milk to Friday Harbor Dairy, and we got $2.80 or something for a 10-gallon can of milk. And then the creamery went broke. So Phil hauled milk to Burlington to the dairy goat. And then they wanted us to go and put in a big holding tank and get a truck with a tank to haul it. And it just wasn't in it. And so we got a white-faced bull and started raising beef cows from then on. But Phil worked out a lot. He had the baler, and he used to go to, he used to clear over on Decatur with it and bale hay. And
how did he get the baler over to Decatur?
On a raft down here at Mud Bay, and then he got on there and the tractor wheel fell through the raft and they jacked it up, and those people over there, they just made do with anything, So Phyllis and I, we left down there where they put it on and run down here, and it was gone, and I just knew it sunk, but it didn't. And then he came down there where the state park is, and he unloaded there. It was a lot easier.
Oh, by Spencer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were there, did you know very many folks over on Decatur in those days?
Well, Phil did. I was too young. My folks used to go over there to dances, and of course they took me along. And we'd lay down on the bench and go to sleep.
Yeah.
Well, when you were a young woman, did you go to dances at Woodman Hall?
Some.
Some?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I understand it was the commercial club that organized the dances.
Yeah, probably so.
That was the forerunner of the Chamber of Commerce.
They called it that?
The commercial
first,
club.
First put that wood floor in, and that's been a long time ago. It sure stood up good.
Uh-huh.
And old Ed Fagerholm, he was head of that, and he really did a good job when he'd done something like that. And they even roller skated on it for some time. Didn't hurt it a bit.
Wow.
It's amazing. Yeah. And it looks beautiful now.
Yeah, they say it does.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it since they repaired it. They've been after me, and
You'll have to come to the senior lunch, and then you can see it.
Yeah, that's what they're after me. I don't know. They want me to go Wednesday, and I just don't know because I don't get around that good, and I have to use a walker. And
well,
even then, I don't know if I have to walk very far. I'll be in trouble.
No, I think you could do just fine.
There are a lot of folks who go who have walkers.
Have walkers.
Donated them, not a big sum, but it was pretty good. And when he died, and so I guess I should see what they did with it.
I think you deserve a free lunch there, Betty.
You know, I don't expect that.
Phil used to work on the ferry too, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Substitute him.
Uh huh.
That's where he should have stayed. He had a good pension.
But he'd rather farm.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you, too, when you were growing up, was it a real treat to have candy? That's what the Harris...
Well, the only time... I might have been lucky. I don't know. But Christmas time, they gave a... That's what you used to give the kids it was not a stocking, but a paper bag, and it was a handful of candy and some nuts and an orange in it, you know, and when they had the Christmas parties and that kind of stuff. But we were lucky. They had penny bars. They were about like that. When we'd go to the store, we'd stay in the car, and they'd always give us a penny bar. And we'd be about...
Oh.
Yeah.
Just think, a big treat would be getting an orange in a paper bag at Christmas time.
Oh, yeah.
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 Is that for you, too, Ollie? What was it like for you, like, during the wartime? How old are you?
I'm from 1923, so I'm 2 years younger than Betty.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, Christmas time, what years are you thinking when you had penny bars and oranges?
Oh, I don't know. I'm in the late 20s.
Yeah.
And so in the...
Well, I remember that we got the oranges, too. An orange, you know, it was a very special treat.
Never.
Of course, in the Netherlands, the oranges had to come from Spain.
Ah.
Yeah. So they came from a long ways.
I guess we had Jap oranges. They weren't cost very much. And they came in a little wooden box in those days.
Little mandarin oranges.
Yeah.
Or satsumas.
They were really good.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Did you get nuts?
Pardon?
Did you get any nuts? I was thinking oranges
was
and
some nuts.
Nuts
in the sack. And
how about pieces of coal?
No.
Oh, that's good. I think my grandmother told me that.
Well, you're always
she
supposed
used
to hang
to get
your stocking
coal.
By the mantle. Well, we never had a fireplace, so... We didn't have no mantle, but we used to hang it by the Christmas tree, and we'd get something in it. When Phyllis was little, she hanged her sock up, and those days, I always put long socks on the kids, you know. And Phil went and tied a knot in the end of the sock, so it wasn't so big.
She wanted the whole long sock filled.
Right.
Yeah. So you also mentioned that your dad played the violin.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't you tell us that your dad played the violin?
Mm-hmm. Mom could play the piano, too, some by ear. And then they got lessons for me from a Mr. Presser that lived across from Woodman Hall in that house. So my brother Ed played the saxophone. And my brother Art played the drums. And then Phil's brother played a trumpet, Jim, the younger one. And Buck Wilson played a clarinet. And Art Kilpatrick played the bass sax, I think it was. And Roy owned Lopez Store. I can't think of his name. He kind of got us started. We played for dances quite a bit, and we got $2. We thought we were rich.
Uh-huh.
And then pass the hat and get us to play for another hour, you know. And now with arthritis, I don't know if I could even play.
Huh. What did you play again?
I played the piano.
Oh.
Yeah.
And these dances were at Woodman Hall?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was quite
a bit of music on Lopez, because Mary and Joan have also been telling about, they were Macaulays, and they told stories about music that they made at home. Their mother played the piano, and then everybody else played something, you know.
It's great.
Yeah, it was very good.
Well, what about, I remember you were telling us about the Grange, too, and when it was built there, you told us Joe Burt built it. Do you remember when that was?
I don't remember what year that was, but he had the contract, and he only had so long to do it, or he wouldn't get paid, which he did.
So he hurried up and built the Grange.
Yeah.
And we've been using it ever since.
That's right.
It was a school for years and years and years.
Now, I remember that you told us a story about when you were a child, that your father took you swimming.
Oh, yeah, down at the lake. And there was two bathhouses there then.
Hummel Lake?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he was a real good swimmer, and he used to put me on his back and swim around out there. And some years when it really froze hard, well, they skated all over. One year they took a car out there. I was running around with it.
Wow. Must have really froze hard that year.
No, I don't think they even swim there. I don't know.
Not much. There's quite a bit of algae, I think. Now, did you ever go fishing there?
No, I didn't. My brother Doug did.
Uh-huh. Did he caught stuff there?
I don't know if they did or not.
Now, Phil had quite a history with pigs. I know when I got to the island, Phil and pigs were often used in the same sentence. And he would help some of the young people who had moved here and were trying to learn how to live off the land. If they had any questions, they were told to call Phil to come and help them, and he would come over and...
Yeah, they did with the cows, too, if they couldn't calve, you know, help them get the calf and save its life and her life. Yeah, that's a long time ago now. He got so he couldn't do it. And first part of April, before he passed away, we had one get down, and we didn't know it because we couldn't see up there. Now the barn's in the road. And so I guess it was Steve saw it, and he told Jen, so Jen came over, and the bull, he was kind of guarding the cow and kind of scared him off. So then we got
So you're
Harry.
Talking about Steve Orcutt and Jan Johnson?
Yeah.
Is that who you're talking about? Okay.
And so then I got Gary Buffin to come over, and he got the calf and brought the cow down and put it in the corral and got the calf, and she jumped up and took off, and everything was fine, you know. And we thought, and the next day our neighbor, Don Johnson, came, and he used to feed the cats for Phil then, and he couldn't do it. And her laid down and died. And that upset Phil terribly.
The calf died?
Cow.
Oh, the mama cow.
The calf was dead. Oh. Evidentially, it died, and she got infection or something.
Oh, right. Maybe milk fever or something, because she couldn't.
Something. Oh. Yeah, she was young, too. You know, we only lost three or four over all the years, so I guess it's pretty lucky.
Yeah. That's a good record.
And after one piece of fence up way in the back there was very bad, and so I just couldn't worry about it, so I sold them, and the sheep, too.
Uh-huh.
Because you really got to take care of them when they lamb, and couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So Gary, he's got some around here someplace.
Gary Buffum?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So do you think there's a future for farming on Lopez?
I don't think so. Not well, I don't know. You know, I heard here the other day about the price some of these people are charging, that butcher of beef and that, and mm-hmm. sheep. Mm-hmm. If you can get a price like that, maybe there is.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Oh, it's crazy.
Well, everything's going up.
We butchered our stuff and cut and wrapped it for around $1.50 a pound. Now they want about 14.
Yeah, it's getting harder to
very
buy.
Very different.
Yeah.
Well, that's a little much.
Yeah.
I still think I could make money milking a cow and selling the milk for 50 cents a gallon.
Oh, you could. You think you could?
And yeah, feed the cow. But the trouble of it, we did sell just to some friends, you know, after we got out of the business of shipping. We still had to do it till we got rid of them. But I couldn't do it now.
But you
didn't even walk out that far.
But you did a lot of milking.
Yeah.
Years and years of it.
Yeah.
What
first
did you
when
have?
We came, why we milked by hand, and then we got the milking machines, and then that, we each had our own machine, and we built. We had the six in there at a time, and I think the most we had was two batches, 12, and then we had two or three in the driveway, and that we milk once in a while, and otherwise we kept calves on them and sold veal, you know, and made a little money that way.
So
now
you
don't even see veal, I don't think, anymore.
No, not much.
Mm-mm.
So if you milk that many cows, like how on a regular day, when did you get up, and how long did it take you to do the chores?
5:30, 6 o'clock, and I'll never forget when we bought that cattle truck. We had an old one before, and then this one was brand new, and it didn't have a box or anything. So we'd go out in the morning and milk, and then Phil would work out or whatever, and come home, and we'd eat, and then we'd go out there and milk the cows again, and then we'd go in the driveway, and we'd work on that truck, and he'd bore holes, and I'd put the bolts in, and then he'd put the nuts on, you know, and criminy, you won't get to bed till 11 or so, and if we ate, we were lucky, and otherwise we're so darn tired, we didn't care if we went ate or not.
Uh-huh.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I don't know. Thinking back, you know, I don't know how we did it.
No.
Couldn't afford hard man, so I was a hard man.
Uh-huh.
Hauling bales, so. We had a big barn up there, too. It blew down one winter, snow and wind, drive in there with load of bales, and there's a thing, it's called a clevis, it's like a U, and I put a rope on there, and I'd slip that through the string on the bale, and then Phil was up above with the rope, and he'd haul one bale up at a time and put it in the mouth, and then lower it back down for another bale.
Put it in the loft of the barn?
Yeah. Well, it was clear from the barn floor up, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the biggest barns I've ever seen in my life, that one outside your door.
No, we had a real big barn up there. It was really neat. And then there was a smaller one out here on the corner where you turn.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally demolished it. Started to fall down, too, after we got this one. Yeah.
That's a big barn. And then I noticed a truck out there as we were driving in.
Yeah,
that has a nice big tree growing right up.
Well, that was my dad's.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's real
and
pretty.
You see the shirt they had the 4th of July with the truck on it and the shirt? Well, that was, they came and took that picture.
Very nice.
Nice to see it in person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we've covered a lot here with you, Betty. We've still got a few more minutes. Is there anything you'd like to say to your radio audience?
I don't know. I guess we didn't get to the part of when we lost Sharon. That's a thing I'll never get over as long as I live. And we had the doctor, and all the kids at school had the flu, so the doctor said, she had the flu, and he gave her some penicillin, and she'd had a lot of infections and stuff, and before her eyes and boils and stuff, and I kept saying to Phil, I know she's got appendicitis, and well, he didn't think so, because he'd had it and had his out, but he had a different kind. So then it went on for the week, and on Sunday, she couldn't even get out of bed. She was getting so weak and started throwing up kind of black stuff. And so we got the doctor again. Well, that's time he looked and he see that it was swelled here. So the doctor came in the little seaplane down at the Key Harbor Inn. And so we got in there and went over and they operated, but she got peritonitis. Oh. And this one lady, she, I don't know if she was a nurse or what, she runs some hospitals. And I said, I think it's hereditary because Phil's dad was subject to blood poison, and Phil was, and Sharon.
Uh-huh.
Oh, she didn't think so, but I still think so.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, she didn't come out of it. I don't think I'll ever... Losing Betty Ann, I accepted that, but I tried to get a doctor for her, too, in Seattle. Well, if today's my day off. If she's still sick tonight, let me know. By night, Phil came home from work, and I'd been trying to wash clothes, and my folks were going to be there for dinner, and she wouldn't let me rock her. She was hurt, I guess, or something, and couldn't talk yet, you know. So Phil went in to check her, and she went into convulsions, and so we got her in the car and went to Ballard, and Mr. Melgard, the doctor, you get her to Harborview and go down to the police station and have them give you an escort. Well, instead of that, they took me in the police car, and boy, the siren going and the people were flying. Every time I hear a siren, I think of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked her over, and then they took her upstairs, and they wouldn't let me go with them or Phil either, and told them to take me home, because I was 4 months pregnant then with Sharon. And we got home, and we were there for an hour or two, and they phoned up, and she passed away. Mm-hmm. But they told us that if she'd have lived, she'd have been a vegetable, because her fever was so high that they couldn't even register it.
Oh.
And they never had another case for 7 years like that.
Mm.
Called it some kind of a blood infection or something.
Is she,
I don't know how she got it, because we hadn't been anywhere.
Is she buried in Seattle?
Yeah, she's in Seattle, and that's one thing I'm thankful for. My daughter, she takes flowers out and stuff, because she is the oldest one, you know.
And Sharon, where is she buried?
She's up at the cemetery.
Uh-huh.
And that's where people make mistakes, and at the time you're so upset, you don't think, you know. So my dad and mom had this lot, and there were, at that time, there were four empties. So Dad, he wanted to have her there, and he paid all the expenses and everything, and I don't know. We let it go, and now she's up at this one, close to them little buildings, Phil's way down the line. Shouldn't have been that way. We should have had our own lot, but you don't think.
But they're all right there on that hill. They're both there on the hill together.
Which is a beautiful hill.
Yeah.
Well, you should have saw it when I remember. It was brush.
Oh, had to do a lot of clearing up there.
Oh, heavens.
Yeah.
These rose bushes and the graves fell in. We used to go up there because nobody took care of it. And then you took care of your own, and that was it.
Uh-huh.
And Mom and Ethel and sometimes just her go up there and do her mother's grave. Her mother's buried there, too. And her brother and my uncle.
Whose mother? Ethel's mother?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Nivolt.
Uh-huh.
And then the brother, he was couldn't talk, you know. And he could hear her, but he couldn't talk. He's buried alongside of her. And then Doug is next, and then Sharon is next.
Uh-huh.
And then Dad and Mom are below him.
Uh-huh. That cemetery has a lot of history.
He never would tell me what he wanted, you know. But Phyllis had bought these four lots up there a long time ago, and that's what she planned, that Phil and her husband would be there. And it ended up, Phil's two brothers are side by side, and then there's a little path in between, and then Phil's right there.
Uh-huh.
So when I mentioned that to him, why, he never said anymore. There was one place up by his mom and dad because they went and buried his mother in their own place.
Uh-oh.
They didn't want to move her, so it's still that way. But then there wouldn't be room for me. Of course, if it had been up to Phil, he would have put me where his aunt is, because it's been over 100 years. And you can do that, I guess.
Oh, wow.
Now they've changed the law up there, too, that you can put ashes on somebody's grave, like Phil's brother, Jim, his wife, and his two kids. They want to be buried with their dad, so they're going to be ashes and put on.
Oh, I see.
That's all right.
Well, thank you, Betty. We're at the end of our time, and it's been wonderful talking with you. And thank you for listening, and please listen again to our show.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll get another show out of you, too. You've got a lot to tell us. Thank you for listening, and this is Once Upon an Island. Bye-bye.
Bye.